All right, hello and welcome to another episode of the Long Ball Football Podcast, a weekly podcast by two brothers about obvious football in Portugal. You listen to myself, Albert, and as always, I'm joined by my brother Barney. How you doing, Barney? How's things?
Yes, good mate. Nice to be back together with you. It's been it's been ages, isn't it? Because I was off, and then we had that one episode, and then you were off to Japan.
You
caught a game, didn't you? What players did you see?
I was off for three weekends. So I missed 2 weekends of Premier League football. Barney aptly covered the podcast for us last week. Did a great job. I said you're going to put me out of a job in terms of hosting because it was much better than I do. But I did see some football in Japan. I saw a J League game, FC Tokyo versus Cerezo Osaka. It was the last day of the season, and it was like 8th place versus 9th place. So it was a proper dead rubber fixture, but it was still good. It was funny. I was like trying to keep an eye out for, you know, Japan always have one or two players that you've heard of.
Yeah.
I was looking down the team sheets, and Cerezo Osaka had Shinji Kagawa.
Nice.
He was on their team sheet, but he wasn't involved on the day. Like, he wasn't in the match day squad. So I didn't get to see him. But do you guys know, and I should say, sorry, we have Patrick Ribeiro joining us. Patrick, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Very good. Thank you for joining us. Because I want to ask you both, are you aware of, do you remember this name, Yuto Nagatomo?
Yes, Inter Milan.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Inter Milan. The Japanese wing back. He was like a right-footed wing back. Yeah. Inter Milan. He came on for like the last 10 minutes.
I was going to say, Kagawa, and this might come up in the Christmas quiz we might do over Christmas, but one of those players where like it wouldn't surprise me if he had played in Portugal. Do you know what I mean? Like, one of those players.
Yeah, I think he's too big for Porto Menens. Probably too big for Porto Menens. But this is what I was thinking, though. I was going in thinking, am I going to recognise any names from Portugal? Alas, no one from the Portuguese league was involved in any of the games I watched. But still a fun experience. The atmosphere wasn't anything on Rio Ave at home, but, you know, never mind. let's not waste any more time. Let's get stuck into it, because we've got a lot to talk about. Obviously, I've been away for a few weeks. Barney did a podcast where I was off, but a lot has been happening in the Premier League. A lot has changed in the last few weeks, as we were saying to Patrick before the recording, specifically with Sporting. So we're grateful for you joining us to shed some light on what's been going on there. Let's start, gents, then with Sporting's game from the weekend, because it has been a difficult start for Joao Pereira. He lost every league game before the weekend since Ruben Amorim left, and there was a real sense that this was a must-win fixture for him if he was going to remain as Sporting manager. They did manage to beat Boavista 3-2 for a vital 3 points. That said, they made very hard work of the game, conceding 2 goals, needing to win 3-2 on the night with goals from Francisco Trincão and Victor Jóqueres. Patrick, it's been a crazy few weeks for Sporting. So much has changed in just a matter of weeks. Can you just sum up for us what it's been like since Joao Pereira became manager? Like I said, this was his first win in the league. He had that win in the cup in his very first game in charge. Since then, it's been very, very difficult time. So a lot's changed. So let us know what, from your perspective, what those kind of changes have been and how important this result might be.
I mean, when you're in a situation like that, as delicate as it has been for Joao Pereira, any win is super important. He just needed that to really move things like forward and hopefully try add to that, catch some rhythm again and start looking like, you know, genuine title contenders as Sporting were. Like, Sporting were clear favourites at the moment that Ruben Amorim left to go to Man United. Now all of a sudden things have changed so dramatically that it no longer looks that way. So it was important to get that win. It was important to relieve the pressure a little bit. I know there was a lot of people that were saying that, you know, regardless of what happens, whether Sporting win, draw, or lose, the writing's still on the wall for João Pereira. And he'll, you know, eventually be let go. But I don't know. I think, it's just been a tricky one. It literally, the whole Sporting universe has been like flipped upside down. And I think everyone's lost their cool, their rationale. Lots of people turned impatient all of a sudden. And I genuinely really feel for the new manager. I really feel for João Pereira, because it's not easy. I don't think we can judge the results. I don't think we can judge his ability at all based on the results that we've seen. Yes, Sporting has a fantastic team, but I think when a manager such as Amorim leaves, he leaves a massive hole to fill. And I think the players first and foremost have really felt that absence. I don't know what João Pereira is like as a character, but when you're as loved as and as revered as Amorim was, it's so difficult to live up to that, especially in a short space of time. So I think players have really lost that guidance, that presence that Amorim had, and you can see it in games. Some of the games we actually do start quite well, but when things go wrong, they keep like snowballing. And yeah, I think the players need that guidance that thinks at times João Pereira is helpless in terms of giving it to them. To add to the fact that he's not like fully qualified, so he's not the main man who stays out there on the touchline. I just think it's a very frustrating situation for him.
Very stranger.
Yeah, but you know, good result. I think as a display, I thought we played quite well, and there was signs of that as well against Club Brugge. I could see that Sporting were starting to look a little bit more like their usual self. Obviously, the result against Club Brugge wasn't ideal, but given you know whether or not that was a penalty, like if Sporting have got that second goal, it could have been different. And again, against Boa Vista, it was a better performance. Boa Vista have been poor this year, in fairness, but it was more like the Sporting that we usually see. And the two goals that sort of popped up, I think Sporting are in a phase right now where every type of goal they will concede, like goals just fall in like out of the blue. But you know, they have to turn it around. They have to keep working. Hopefully they show him a little bit more patience and let him do his thing. But yeah, it has been a very night and day experience from what we had and what we currently have.
Think, my kind of biggest takeaway from this game, and obviously I've been away, so I haven't been able to follow them as closely until this game, but the kind of impression I got from this game was that the players were still under some kind of like, don't want to be too dramatic, but like some kind of like mental shock from the loss of Amorim. Like they hadn't really kind of recovered psychologically. It was like it seemed to be that psychological weakness had crept into a lot of the players. A lot of the defenders as well. I thought there were a lot of poor performances in the defense when you look at like De Bast and Eduardo Quaresma. I mean, like Eduardo Quaresma looked like going back to some of those performances that we saw from him where he looked like a kind of scared youth player who wasn't kind of up to wearing the shirt, but which is a shame because we've seen how good he can be. And De Bast was pretty poor, I thought, for a couple of the goals. But yeah, it does seem like the players are still struggling to get over the loss of Amorim. And I think there was this. The thought process at the time when Jopre was appointed was almost a kind of, oh, they've made a good choice by going down the continuity route, and maybe this is all going to be a walk in the park because they just keep doing what Amorim was doing and everything will be fine. Looking back, it was probably perhaps a little bit naive to assume that they would be plain sailing, that this new manager would just come in and continue everything that Amorim had done and everything would just continue as it had done. The board have obviously made this decision to go down the continuity route with João Pereira, someone who's going to come in and play the same systems and use the same players and have the same youth policy and continue the good work that Amorim had done. I think that will kind of help João Pereira. That will give him more time because unless the board really decide in the next week or so that they're just going to rip up everything that they've done and bring in an outside manager. I mean, I know we saw the rumours of Abel Ferreira. Like, I mean, a fantastic manager who undoubtedly is good enough to manage Sporting, but that's a whole different situation. You're basically saying, okay, we're going to move on from Amorim, and it seems like the board have decided not to do that. So that will help Pereira give him more time. But yeah, I wonder whether you agree with that perhaps we were just a little bit naive that this would all be plain sailing, and maybe the not that the results have been misleading under Amorim, but that perhaps we saw this as a more easier job for João Pereira than it's turned out to be.
Yeah, I think it like Amorim is a character. He just means so much, not just to the fans who obviously loved him, but to the players as well. He's such a giant figure. You could compare it a little bit to like the sort of environment Slot could have potentially walked into with Klopp gone. Like he's that big. It's kind of a, I feel like for any manager, you do approach that sort of job with caution because the heights that were set were so huge. I think it's easy for that to happen like at the end of the season, where you got a lot more time to digest and work on things. The way it happened in the middle of the season, I think it felt like very raw. And I think Sporting were also, like, if you look back to the game against Braga, which could have gone so differently for them, being a goal down and then all of a sudden turning it around quite late. I think there are already signs of Sporting looking a little bit unstable in form. And I feel like João Pereira has been quite unlucky and picked up that, and it's worsened under him. But I think just psychologically, the players have really felt that absence. And when it comes to filling that void, I don't know whether the board has been naive or maybe a bit arrogant and thought, yeah, this is easy. Just get João Pereira in all of a sudden. I think Braga went through a similar phase where they were just doing the same thing as well. Like the manager goes, oh, would you get a B team manager? Then they'll do the job. Until eventually they realize, okay, we can't actually pull that card all the time. I feel like Sporting have tried to do that. Whether or not João Pereira is ready or has the quality, I don't know. I just feel like in that sort of situation as a player, you're probably looking or expecting something not as big as Amuni, but like completely different, but also substantial, you know? I feel like the dressing room now, and I think it's becoming more and more apparent now in hindsight, that it needed an appointment that would shock the dressing room in a positive way, in a completely different way. Like someone who could impose the same sort of respect, and take the club forwards. It didn't have to be like a direct replacement, but just someone of note that makes you think, oh, hold on, like I'm being managed by this guy now. Like we know who he is. Like he's done bits here and there. I felt like that's what Sporting needed. With João Pereira coming, it's a bit like I don't know if it commands the same drive to like for the players. I'm not sure whether they quite feel as steady as they once were with Amuni, especially at the top for the heights that Sporting were going for the title. And that weighs heavy on the players' minds because they know that's where they should be. They know they should be going for the double. The fans expect it and demand it. It's just a lot of emotions and expectations all at the same time. So yeah, in naivety definitely one thing that the board's picked up. Perhaps they should have been a bit sterner, thought a bit more methodically about the change that they needed to impose.
It's definitely still a very interesting time to keep an eye on that managerial position, whether the board will be tempted to pull the plug on the decision that they made, or whether they'll stick by it. Barney, I know you discussed the loss to Santa Clara on the most recent podcast. Obviously, Sporting went on to lose against Moreirense as well. When you think about those games and then look at this game, did you see any improvement in this game?
Yeah, I mean, one of the positives I thought was, and please correct me on my pronunciation, but Jalsomos coming in, the young midfielder. Obviously, Morita's out injured now, which is a big blow for Sporting. He's been one of their key players in that midfield and so important to their balance. But he's come in and looked good, and he played in the Champions League as well. So that's a positive that Pereira's done. Trincão's obviously looking good again. They had a really, really impressive game in this one. So those are those are improvements. I mean, the negative I was keen to bring up was the goalkeeper position because it was Franco Israel in goal for this game, and we've seen him have okay games, but you know, ultimately he sort of came in for last season when Dan was sort of forced, not forced out of the team, but dropped out of the team. And it was nice to have a different goalkeeper because Adnan himself had made mistakes. But then, you know, he hasn't been has certainly hasn't been a safe pair of hands. Was it because is it Kovacic came in the summer as well and once again didn't had a couple of errors himself. I mean, a statistic I found really interesting was this is the second game this season that Sporting have conceded goals with the goalkeeper not making a save in the game. So like. that's an issue really. And Wanyama was here, and the defense was brimming with confidence. It sort of you didn't really notice it as much, and when the goals were coming in. So I think that now it looks like a really big issue, and particularly as we've been discussing, when a team is low on confidence, as Sporting clearly are, you are going to perhaps see more chances come against the goalkeeper. And yeah, when you've got Israel Kovacevic, you're not brimming with complete confidence. So that's that's an area I've seen talk about, who's going to be the number one. I think it's a bit up for grabs, and Kovacevic has been playing in the cup games, and maybe he'll get a run in the league. And but that's the decision that that needs to be made. But there are improvements, and they're perhaps over the shock of this bad run. We're seeing similarities with Manchester City at the moment. With that, it's people just, pundits describe it, ex-players describe it, like confidence is such a key part of the game, and when you're low in it, it's really hard to get it back. So if he is able to navigate that, then that would be great. But it was, this is a really important result. The fact that they got the first goal as well would have helped. They need to build on this.
I think that's the first time João Pereira has been compared to Pep Guardiola, but I'm sure he'll take that. But no, I completely agree, and I think there it is worth looking at the context of the game as well, with Sporting missing Diomande and Inacio, Morita, and those kind of players, and still scoring three goals. And I think there was some defensive weakness, but like you said, I think there were certain players that came out of the game with their heads held high, like Trincão. Absolutely played really well, probably responsible for Sporting getting the win. In fact, to be honest, most of the midfield and the attack I thought was largely positives in the game. So yeah, hopefully this is a bit of a turning quarter from turn of a corner from Sporting's perspective. Definitely it will be it will give João Pereira a few more days and weeks in the job, perhaps. Barney, I want to talk to you about Boavista, because obviously perhaps they would have seen this as an opportunity to take advantage of Sporting. They would have seen the results that Moreirense got, that Santa Clara got, albeit probably better teams than Boavista at this point in time. And they played their part. They scored their two goals. But, obviously no cigar at the end of the game, but a decent performance from them.
Yeah, I mean, Bosnić getting on the score sheet is good, because he really hasn't been able to find any scoring form recently. So that's good for them. Bruno Onyemaechi sort of playing further forward, left wing as well, I liked. It's, once again, we're talking about a Boavista team who, yeah, just it's incredible that these players still seem so motivated. I mean, a player I really like is in the midfield. Joe Silva, I think he's like one that come up from the academy. I go, he got a few games in the last year, but he's a yeah. I really like him, and there's yeah, like I said, once again we're seeing like shining lights where we shouldn't really in Bovista. They gave him a good game, and yeah, it's they're doing all right as well.
Continue to punch above their weight, perhaps. One silver lining as well from this weekend, from Sporting's perspective, was the fact that Benfica weren't able to capitalise. They've had a good start to life in the Premier League under Bruno Lage, especially since Ruben Amorim left, and they've kind of capitalised on some of Sporting's dropped points. But they suffered their first setback in the league under Bruno Lage by drawing 1-1 away at AVS. They led 1-0 until the 94th minute, when AVS equalised from a set piece. Not a disaster by any means, of course, but a win against AVS would have put them just 2 points behind Sporting, with a game in hand and an opportunity to go top of the table. But as it stands, if they're winning their game in hand, they will just be 1 point behind league leaders Sporting. Patrick, obviously a disappointing result for Benfica, who, in my opinion, just it's such a cliche, but never did enough to kill off the game when they should have, and never completely shut out AVS in a way that they probably shouldn't if they were going to go on to win the game. They let them back in far too easily. Didn't get that second goal, and they were punished at the end of the game.
Yeah, it was a bit of a game of two halves, wasn't it? That one, Benfica started quite well, got the goal that they were after. But then in the second half, when AVS started coming for them, they just didn't take on the warnings, and the hosts kept going and kept going, and eventually got the goal that they deserved. And I think it was telling, at the end of the game, that a couple of the Benfica, team members like Frederik Arsenis, etc., all said that yeah, They deserve to draw that game. We didn't deserve to win, based on the performance that we put out there. It was refreshing to see them say that, in fact. Benfica as a whole, it's an interesting one, because when you look at the title race and you look at all three teams, I felt like Benfica were well positioned now with the backcourt at Sporting to be like, okay, like let's take command of this league now. Let's go up a gear. Barney said how important confidence was. This was their chance to really utilize that. I feel like a draw here sort of sets them back a little bit. Because Benfica fans know, like, given the season they had the year before, and the struggles that they've had at the start of this season, it's very easy to remember that, like, things aren't exactly okay at Benfica like that. So doubts begin to creep in. I think there's doubts across the board with all three big teams. I think it was an interesting result. Very good performance though from the hosts, up against Benfica. I think I'd agree with everyone that said that they did definitely deserve a point from that. And it begins to make things look interesting in the top, with that result. It was interesting.
It's funny that, yeah, as you say, because the story of this weekend, really, and we can speak in more general terms before we come on to the Porto game and the rest of the Benfica game, but the story of the weekend really is the closing of the gap at the top of the table. But in a way that it almost feels like not because of positive form, but because of people kind of slipping up here and there. And I did see something amusing on Twitter the other day, which was just about, how has Bruno Lage found himself as the best manager in the Premier League after all this time? It's not particularly glowing endorsement of the state of the Premier League at the moment, which I think is an interesting overall point. But I digress. I mean, Barney, as Patrick said, as you said, momentum is such an important thing in football, and with Sporting in such a tricky position, you wonder whether this is a real missed opportunity for Benfica to kind of make a claim on that. On that title race, because I feel if Benfica had won this game, even though they're still behind with the game in hand, I'm sure they would be in their heads and in the fans' heads almost the new favourites for the title with that opportunity to go top of the league. That said, they didn't take it, and they leave the door open slightly for Sporting to kind of have their own little revival.
Yeah, I feel like the issue I have with Benfica, because I have been really impressed with the results that Large has got since he's come in. But I think the issue that it's becoming a bit more obvious to me is that there doesn't seem to be a particular strength for this team. They're not devastating going forward. They're not solid at the back. It seems to be more the individual players that have got sorted out the results. So when you look at like Di Maria and Postecoglou in particular, individual moments that have carried them through. I mean, looking at the attack in particular, Arthur Cabral came into this game. Pavlidis hasn't racked in the goals, and I feel like the striking position for Benfica has been an issue for so long, in the sense that, I mean, I would even include Gonçalo Ramos and Darwin Núñez in this, and that they've never seemed to have had a truly devastating striker. And I'm saying this in sort of the recency bias of having Gyökeres in the league and the form that Samu's in. It feels like they haven't, Gyökeres can sort of make a goal himself, but he's also like with his movement, and Samu's got like a, he's like a killer, like his shot is just so powerful. And it feels like Benfica haven't had that for a long time, and it, like anyone like that. And like I'm not sort of trying to single out Benfica, because there's strikers like I would look at Evan Nilsson or Paulinho in that sort of bracket of not being the peak striker that one of the big three teams should probably have. And in this is the second game in a row that Benfica have had less shots than their opposition, against Vitória, now against AVS. And I guess that sort of highlights the two things really: the lack of creativity from the midfield, but also the lack of clinicality that they're getting from their strikers. They need their strikers to be scoring more goals, essentially. And in Cabral and Pavlidis, I don't think they're going to get that. I mean, and the other over the pitch, Albert, is that's coming off the back of that stat about the shots is the defence, right? And the midfield protecting it. And in this game, Barrera just is not Florentino. He's got the engine, but he's not. There's not the defensive cover there. Antonio Silva coming in as well is. Yeah, I'm really torn on Antonio Silva, but it feels like when he's played recently, it hasn't felt rock solid at the back. So there's a lot of issues there. There's still a lot of quality in that team, though. You know, I'm Dooney getting his goal, which is nice to see him have a good game. Actually, he was quite impressive. But yeah, there are issues, and I think, like I said, I can't see a real out and out strength to this team under Large at the moment.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that. I have a similar kind of question mark over Benfica. It just comes down to I'm not sure what their best starting 11 is, and maybe the manager doesn't as well. I mean, it doesn't always have to be a problem with a team where there's a lot of rotation. I mean, I do quite like seeing a team where essentially you know what the starting 11 is going to be, and they know the system and they deliver every week. But that doesn't have to necessarily be the only way that a team can be successful. Like, you can, of course, see teams rotate regularly and have multiple options on the bench. But with Benfica, for me, it's more just like I feel like they're constantly going around in circles trying to plug little gaps in the team, like trying to fix little things by trying out different players, and it never quite works. And I mean, you can look at that in a central midfield with, you know, Florentino. Sometimes he's in the team, sometimes he's not. Sometimes he's what they want, sometimes he isn't. You know, we saw Amdouni play in this game. We haven't really seen much of him this season. He looks good, but, you know, a player that has can't really get in the team, hasn't really grabbed the shirt and made it his own. We saw Schlader up come on in this game. You know, players like that who I'd kind of forgotten about in the striker situation with Cabral and Pavlidis. It's like there's not enough players at Benfica for me who, like I said, have grabbed their shirt and said, like, this is me, this is my position. I mean, the one player you can say who has really done that is a centre back, Araujo, who I think has been their standout player this season. He's the one person who I think has almost made himself undroppable in their team. And maybe Aktürkoğlu, since he's come in as well, you would say is probably one of the standout players. But I just feel like there's not enough players like that at Benfica at the moment for me to feel really confident in their ability.
Can I just come in about Araújo? Because he's just signed a contract for 2029, and I remember the rumors about him perhaps going Crystal Palace in the summer. But I just feel like, you know, we were talking about Antonio Silva going at some point for 100 million to any club, but Araújo is, I think, is going to be so key for Benfica going forward. You look at, like, there's no players really in there who have come up from the academy. Like, there's you look at the Portuguese contingent as well. You're like, he is going to be their guy. You know, Jaramillo is going to be out of the club probably. Otamendi might be gone by the end of the season. I feel like Arujo going forward is going to be such, like, he's got that ability. He's perhaps got the potential where, I don't know, he could stay unless it's going to be for a huge club. If you see what I mean. I know I talk about him a lot, but I was just have sort of had that thought today when I saw that contract extension. Just thinking about if we're looking at Benfica in the future, I think he is going to be a real key player for them.
Yeah, I hope so. Very impressive. And I think it's important also to say we do sometimes come with an air of negativity around Benfica, but like they are in a very good position. Like I said, they win their game in hand on Thursday. They're 1 point behind the leaders. And I think all things considered, where they were 5, 10 games ago, I think that's a pretty good position to be in going into the second half of the season. So it's not too bad at all. Patrick, I want to talk to you about AVS because I'm conflicted on them. As much as I don't want to like one of these sort of SAD teams, you know, with the whole situation that they've been in, they are making themselves a very likable team, and they are growing on me a bit, which I'm not sure how I feel about. I mean, they had Lucas Piazza on man of the match today in this
That's
game.
a bit of you, Albert.
What a throwback that is! I mean, I love that guy at Braga. I always root for him at Real Ave. They got Daniel Ramos in the dugout. I always liked him at Santa Clara as well, and I think they've had some decent performances this season. They got a 40-year-old Nene. I don't think he played in this game, but again, what's not to love? But like from my perspective, I think this was another in a kind of series of fairly promising performances. I won't go too overboard, but fairly promising performances. And I think the most important thing to stress with AVS, especially in this game, is that you might look at the scoreline and the timing of their goal, the equaliser, and think that this was a bit of a smash and grab. But I don't think that's a fair reflection of the way that this game went. I think they made their impact on the game for quite an extended period in the second half. And as you said, I think they deserved the draw.
Yeah, fully. As you said, like a lot of the names that you mentioned there, household names. Good to see them come together. Daniel Ramos is a very competent manager. I've always admired his work to a certain extent wherever he's gone. And he looks like he's doing a stellar job at the moment as well with the new boys. And they're a team that, as you say, with all those names, they have the potential to bother most teams. On their day, it was very commendable the way they came at it. As you say, the story of the game, if you just look at it purely from the fact that they scored quite late on, it gives a different kind of impression. Usually in Portugal, you see a team in that sort of situation, they'll be like, "Oh, it's only 1-0. Let's keep it tight until the last 20 minutes, and if it's still 1-0, we can go for it then." That wasn't the case. Like they kept going and going and going. Like from as soon as the second half kicked in. Obviously, they respected their Benfica's moment of dominance in the first half. Second half, it was their turn. And yeah, they caused Benfica a fair spot of bother. That's 2 points dropped for them, for sure. So they're an interesting team. They're a very interesting team.
Yeah, I can't see them bothering the top half of the table, Barney. But I mean, I think for a team like that, any newly promoted team, survival is the main objective, and then anything on top of that is a bonus. And they look on track for that at least.
Yeah, I like their recruitment. I thought, some like Piazon, as you mentioned, Kiki, a left back, experienced in this league. Fonseca as well. I think is an ex-Passos right back who I remember quite enjoying it when he was in the top division. I think the defense of the back line as well is really good. Quite young as well. There's quite a lot of young talent in there. As you said at the beginning, you don't really want to sort of root for an SAD, but then like. I feel like they're doing it quite well, a mixture of sort of experience and some young, like Masani there as well, the Ecuadorian winger who I talked a lot about at the beginning of the season, I think is a real talent, and there's talent to sell there as well. So I think they might be, yeah, they might be all right actually.
Well, we'll keep an eye on as the season goes on. Let's talk about sport, Porto, guys, because I think it was a deceptively important win for them at the weekend and for Vitor Bruno in charge, because he's been under maybe not pressure, but I think there's a little bit of a lack of patience perhaps with from Porto fans with the manner of some of the performances, and they've not exactly been lighting up the league, but they did get an important win, 2-0 against Estrela at the weekend. Takes them to just 2 points behind Sporting in first place. Three wins from their last five games is not too bad in terms of form. But Porto, like I said, for me, it's an interesting case because they haven't exactly lit up the league. The performances haven't been as eye-catching perhaps as they were under Sergio Conceição, although the points tally is fairly respectable. And there are some standout players, including Samu and the like. I don't know what your takeaway from the game was, Patrick, because like I said, it feels harsh to say it when they've just won a routine game, but it's not the most it's not exactly rock and roll football. It's not the most, it doesn't fill you with the most confidence.
Yeah, it was it to me anyway, in the most blunt way possible, it felt like a very flat performance. They got the win, they got the job done, which in Vitor Bruno's eyes would have been the most important thing because he is under pressure. And he knows that any little slip up, even with the win itself, like he's gonna get criticized for it. But a win is a win, 3 points on the board. You can move on with that, you can survive with that. But it wasn't like the most dominant of displays at home as well, to a decent side, but I think the Porto fans will be demanding way more from their players. Not only because they're a top team, but also because I feel like we have seen dominant displays from Vitor Bruno's Porto this season already. I thought they started the season quite well at times, like in certain games early in the season, they were looking relatively good. Until the most recent wobble, with the defeat against Benfica, etc. I think up until that point, they looked all right. But now with pressure seeping in on a manager, etc. It's interesting. Again, it's that whole confidence thing, in terms of it seeping into the player's psyche. If I was a Porto fan, I would have definitely been disappointed with the performance. But having said that, a win is a win. None of the big teams look 100% there. I think you just got to keep rolling with it and see where it takes you. I think Porto itself are in a particular interesting period, with the whole change in the hierarchy. I think there's still a lot of division there, in terms of what's right and what's wrong. I'm not sure AVB has the full backing of all the Porto fans, like the results of the election suggests. I think when there's such a drastic change like that, it can be very easy for the people to think, oh, like, bring back the good old days. I think every little bad result, it will be amplified by a million, just because of that, because of the success that they did have under Peter Karsten, what he means to the club. There's obviously a bit of friction there between both camps as well. There's the whole backstory between Vitor Brun versus Sergio Conceição. Did he betray him? Did he not? There's just too much, like, there ready to bubble. Every little bad result, anything that's not like a flawless performance, you're going to hear from it. But saying that, positives, they did win. There were some decent displays. I thought I was quite happy to see Fabi Vieira do quite well. He's slowly beginning to squeeze his way into the team, and he needs it because he's a very talented player, and I think many would have hoped that he would have kicked on at Porto back to his best football, like he did 2 3 years ago. But yeah, a few positives, and honestly, you can't argue with a win at the end of the day.
Yeah, I definitely agree about Fabio Vieira. His best performance since coming back to Porto, and that's really important for him to, like you say, get back to his best. I do feel a little bit sorry for Vitor Bruno sometimes because they've only won one less game this season than the current league leaders Sporting. They lost twice. Correct me if I'm wrong. I'm pretty sure their losses in the league were to Benfica and Sporting in the league, which, I mean, two tough games. I know they beat Sporting in their Supertazz at the beginning of the season. I know they lost to, was it Moreirense in the cup as well? So all these things kind of seep into the fans' mindset. But in terms of league performance, like it's not been that bad. Obviously, it's really important for a club like Porto and for a manager like Vitor Bruno to perform in the biggest games when it matters. So those losses against Benfica and Sporting, that will be really disappointing for the fans that they've, lost the two biggest games they have in the league in the first half of the season. Second half of the season, assuming that he's still there, which I think he probably will be, that will be pretty much his biggest task will be to improve in those big games and to get wins in at least one of those Clásicos coming up in the second half of the season. I think, and also it's important to think back. I think, Barney, I'm trying to remember when we were doing our kind of pre-season, like preview shows talking about Porto. I'm pretty sure one of the things we would have said is that this is going to be a transitional year for Porto with such huge changes. And maybe it is important to remember that there has been those seismic changes at the club, like losing the president who was there for so long, losing the manager that was there for so long, and all things considered, it's not as bad as it could be. So, my personal opinion is I don't think there's any harm in giving Vitor Bruno a bit more time. I don't think there's much to lose. I don't think they're particularly in danger of being out of the top three, which will probably be Champions League football next season, which will be good for the club. Barring some major disasters, I think there's still an opportunity to get maybe have another transfer window, maybe another two transfer windows, and allow Vitor Bruno to grow into the role. But yeah, that's just me. I mean, what did you think of the game, Barney? And what do you think of them so far?
Yeah, no, I mean, we've seen him sort of play this with Galeno at left back at the beginning of the season a few times, where the where he saw there was an opportunity to sort of really go for a team, and there were glimpses of that working at the beginning of the season. But like as you both described, this game that wasn't there. There wasn't that ruthlessness. There wasn't that sort of drive to attack. And then yeah, to hearing you say there sort of how this was going to be a transitional season for him, but I think that that's where the issue lies is really is that we're not really. We don't really know what he's transitioning to, right? You've got the sort of the Conceição sort of style of, they're still getting results despite not playing great. You've seen various combinations of players behind the striker. I mean, I'm looking at, obviously, I do think the way he's brought Fabio Vieira in, is good and that is working because you ultimately need to bring him in. He's probably going to be your best attacking midfielder. But then you look at other players like Ivan Jamie, who teased us with the potential of like finding his place in this Porto team, and then he's out of the team again. Dani Nmaso coming in for this game almost randomly as well, but having an okay game. I think there's a real problem. And then slightly further back in the midfield, Nico Gonzalez has sort of cemented his place, which is nice. But then you've got this Estácio Varela thing, who plays there, and I think that's where perhaps Porto fans are getting frustrated because it's not really clear about what Vitor Bruno wants to do. I think ultimately, I feel like they are doing pretty decently considering, the amount, as you described, the amount the change at the club and the change of manager and still being well in this title race. They obviously had a disappointing performances outside of the league, but that might happen. It just, yeah, I think my real issue with Vitor Bruno really is that I don't really know what his best team is or what he wants to do with it, with the players he's got. And I always look at the squad and I do think there's so much talent there. So much talent, or maybe not so much the talent, but the potential of talent. And I'm looking at Nmaso, I'm looking at Ivan Jamie in particular, right? Because those are players that came with the promise of having a bright future. And I feel like they've, in Conceição and now perhaps in Vitor Bruno, they're not getting the manager to sort of take them to that next level. And ultimately, that's what Porto are. They're a club to sell talent eventually. And if that's not going to happen, then they might have issues further down the line. But yeah, I think, it's they're still racking up the points. And consistently, I've had it in my head that they're in a worse off position than they are. So, yeah.
Well, exactly. I feel like Barney, when you talk about Vitor Bruno there, you're dancing around using the word like identity. What's Porto's identity when it comes to Vitor Bruno? Maybe a lack of it. I feel like it's such, and that's another thing, it's so hard for Vitor Bruno to follow someone like Sergio Conceição when it comes to identity and personality and all that. Because that was Sergio Conceição, like that Porto under him was almost a cult of Conceição. It was like he was. He was the image of the club, and he was such a huge personality at that club while he was there. And that isn't Vitor Bruno. That's not the type of manager that he's going to be. He's not a Conceição. He's not a Mourinho. He's not one of these guys for whom he is the main sort of attraction at the club. Like, he obviously is a very competent coach and wants and has his own ideas for how he wants the team to play and all this kind of stuff. But yeah, he's obviously not, he's not Sergio Conceição basically. So there is always going to be an element of adjustment in terms of how the players react to their manager and what role the manager has with the team. So it's going to be, as I always remind myself with Porto, a longer process perhaps than we realize, and important to recognize that they're not doing too badly. Like, things are mostly fine. As Patrick said, they won the game. They did what they needed to do, and they seem to be doing what they need to do most of the time under Vitor Bruno. I think, it will be interesting to see with maybe another transfer window and the rest of the season if they can grow, if we can see improvement, and if we can see Vitor Bruno become more of the kind of fill out his shoes a little bit more at Porto, and because it's a big job, a very big job, and I think he still has a little bit to prove that he's the right man for it. Gents, I don't have much on Estrella D'Amadora other than Bruno Brigido made some amazing saves in the goal, so I wanted to give him a bit of credit for that. And Barney, I'm sure you've got a little something on Estrella for us.
I was just going to say about Luis Nani retiring. I was a bit,
Oh yeah, true.
I was a bit gutted that happened, and I
Did he
can't remember.
score? Did he
I was
score in the
just about
league?
to ask
Did we
that.
get to see the celebration? I'm not sure we did.
Feel like
No,
he did
but like,
score, didn't
you might.
he? He scored against Braga or something.
I know for a fact he scored, and then it got flagged for offside before he could celebrate. I remember that very
Oh.
clearly. But yeah.
Yeah. No, I was like, that was I was excited at the beginning of the season, but then it never really wasn't really the return to Portuguese what I thought it was going to be. But partly because it was hard for him to get in this team. I think Rodrigo Pinho and Kikas are really good strikers. I just yeah I'm a little worried for Estrella, if I am honest, because I think elsewhere on the pitch the quality drops off quite drastically after you go through the front line. So yeah, it could be a difficult season for them.
No, I agree. Gents, there's been some quite chunky topics that we've discussed already, so I feel like we've probably only got time for one more game, but it is another big one because I want to talk about Braga versus Famalicão and another manager who finds himself under pressure in Carlos Carvajal, as his side scraped to a 3-3 draw against Famalicão the weekend. They were 3-1 behind at one point and they scored two late goals, including a 94th minute equaliser to rescue a point. Carvajal's tenure in charge of Braga has been, I think, up and down to say the least, never quite convincing. They currently sit in fifth place in the table behind Santa Clara and 7 points off the top three. Barney, I'll come to you first on this one. What did you see in this game? Did you see it as a hard-earned draw, a team morale getting them over the line, or was it 2 points dropped?
I think yeah, you do have to credit the comeback. I just yeah, it's I don't know who to blame really. I think Carvajal has tried different things with with this squad. I think there are just huge issues at the back which have not been addressed in the transfer market at all. That's the heart of that seems to be all their problems, because you look at the attacking players have got the quality, and we've seen some good moments, and but like I don't know who to blame really, but obviously Carvajal was brought in knowing the squad they had and knowing the job that needs to be done, so they must trust that he is the man to do it. I just yeah I feel like we say it all the time, but that's why I don't really know what more to say, but it's so glaringly obvious. It's like one of the most unbalanced teams in the league, really, like in terms of the issues they've got at the back, and I just, yeah, I don't see, I don't know what any manager could do in terms of that, really. It's just a really hard situation for them.
That's interesting. Do you agree with that, Patrick? Because obviously, I think everyone is of the same opinion, really, that you've got to try and weigh up between is the manager doing enough, but then obvious kind of gaps in the squad. And it does seem to be a weaker Braga squad than we've seen for a little while, especially in the defence.
Yeah, for sure. I think the defense is the key thing that lets them down mostly, because if you look throughout, if you go forwards, amongst their most regular used 11s, there's quality players there, to pick out. It stands out to anyone that follows the Portuguese league quite regularly. Obviously Braga are another team that there's just so many changes that happen, from season to season. So I feel like this year in particular, I think it's not been the most ideal. With preparations, they lost their manager so soon. Coming into it, I think that throws everything sort of up in the air. And all of a sudden, yeah, going from manager to manager is not helpful. Carlos Carvalho, a man who's been there, done reasonably well in the past. It's a little bit trickier this time for him. But given the circumstances, I think you just got to. I think sometimes clubs need to just relax a little, just focus. Like the game against Famalicão, for example, it will be one that will be debated, and I would say Braga, as the home side, has almost the they should almost feel obliged to win, but Famalicão are a very tricky side. With all things said, and if you find yourself 3-1 down to them, like you manage to get away with a 3-3 draw, fair play. Like it's not all bad, because they can be a very tricky side. You look at the table, think Braga, what, fifth now, fourth or fifth. It's disappointing because I know that Braga, what they aspire to be, they want to really push into that top three. And for a couple of seasons now, it's not really looked like that they're anywhere close. I think this season probably replicates that feeling. But you have to situate yourself in reality of things, and keep going. It hasn't been an ideal start for them at all, in terms of preparation. So I think a lot of managers would find it quite difficult, especially with the gaps that they do have in the squad, particularly defensively. You have players like Nyakate, who one day looks amazing, the next you're kind of questioning like what is going through this guy's mind. Paulo Oliveira isn't the youngest anymore. They lost the leader in Joseph Fuentes as well. It's a tricky one. It's a tricky start for them. But you know, with the quality that they have further up the field, there is potential for them to continue improving and steady the ship a bit more.
I don't want to sound like a broken record with Braga, but I always look back to that decision to sack Daniel Souza after one league game. And I still look at that decision and think, what have they gained from doing that and by replacing him with Carlos Carvalho? I mean, I was a big fan of Daniel Souza. I liked what he did at Arouca. I'm not under any illusions that he was necessarily going to be the next Mourinho or the next Pep Guardiola, but I thought they had a good young manager there that deserved more of an opportunity than what he was given. And I think, you know, obviously, Salvador was very keen to bring in Carvajal for whatever reason. Obviously, they'd worked together before. Maybe he was someone he really trusted. Maybe he thought he was, you know, the man who was going to lead Braga for the next few years. Maybe like it was his home. He belonged there. Whatever. I don't know what he thought, but clearly, I think what we've seen since Carvajal's come in is that he doesn't have some magic box of tricks that is going to elevate Braga beyond where they are now, which is an imperfect team who are struggling for form and consistency. I don't think he has necessarily the answers to fix this team. And I think perhaps they wouldn't have been any worse off, at least allowing Daniel Souza to try and shape the team in his image, considering what he'd achieved at other clubs before. But again, I'm going to stop talking about Daniel Souza because I do it every time we talk about Braga, and I need to move on from the past. Barney, I want to talk to you about Famalicão because Famalicão have a new manager, a very interesting appointment as they brought in Hugo Oliveira, a man who started his career as a goalkeeping coach at Benfica and has been part of Marco Silva's coaching staff at Watford, Everton, and Fulham. And yes, I was looking at his Wikipedia page earlier today because I have not got a clue. This is his first managerial job and his first game in charge of Famalicão. I think it's fair to say it was a successful start. Only disappointing from Famalicão's perspective, Barney, is that they didn't take all 3 points because they were in a very strong position, and I thought they looked very convincing for the first 75 minutes of this game.
Yeah, they did, and it was, you know, it's when they play like this, and when you look at that team on paper, you don't like they you feel like they should be in a much stronger position this season than they are. Just some, yeah, Gustavo Sarr really stood out for me. I just hope he continues the rest of the season. I really like. I think he's such a unique sort of attacking midfielder because he's very good on the ball. He's got quite a bit of pace, but he's also quite big. And but he's not big and muscly. He's like sort of tall and slight, but he's not like Özil. Like he's I don't know. I just think he's very unique. You know, I really like that. I think yeah, Hugo Oliveira's. It feels good. And but I feel like we say this so often with Famalicão. Like it feels like a good potential. Like you can see the logic. Like you know he's. Marco Silva's having so much success. Oh, let's get his assistant in, and then like you know, maybe we'll get a payout for someone buying like paying out his contract. I don't, it, yeah, it if it, it feels like this needs to work because it feels like it hasn't worked for a while for Famalicão. But like, but the potential's there. Everything's there for them. You know, they've got a really good team.
Well, this is what I wanted to ask you about, Patrick, because I thought it was a very interesting decision for Armando Evangelista to leave. I think Famalicão were in eighth place when he left. I actually don't know myself whether that was the club thinking they could do better or whether that was a mutual thing, whatever. But for whatever reason, Armando Evangelista, who I thought was a very good manager and had done a very good job, left the club. Do you think it's reasonable for a club like Famalicão to be aiming higher than where they are now? Because I always think that they do have a pretty good squad. They certainly, in my opinion, have a better squad than anybody else in the league outside the top six, at least probably top five. But they were only sort of 3 4 points off sixth place under Evangelista. But anyway, I mean, there is an opportunity to maybe crack that top five, and it seems like they've been wanting to do that for quite a few seasons now.
Yeah, there's definitely potential there. I think every window they actually look quite impressive with the players that they pick out and stuff like that. So obviously, I can imagine that from the start of the season when they draw up their plans, that's where they want to be. They want to be in and around top six, top five, and they have the potential to do that. I think. Do you remember the first season they came up and they were like top three consistently for months?
Pedro González, Tony Martinez, that team.
I don't know
20.
whether an element of that has really spurred on their ambitions, and that's generally where they feel like they should be. But with the players that they do sign, sometimes and the quality that they have, Barney mentioned Gustav Sarr, who for me is a top player. I really do see him making a jump sooner or later to another club. He's got there's elements of him that remind me a little bit of a like a young Zaniolo back when he was like
Oh
ripping it
yeah,
at
that.
Roma. He's that tall, slim figure who's quite tenacious at the same time. And there's just lots of good players like that. I remember when they picked up Zaidu as well, who's very good in the middle of the park. He had great references at Saint-Étienne, and they just have this knack of picking up cute, technically cute players, and putting them together. But in terms of the team, in terms of picking up consistency, that's the only thing that's missing. Perhaps with a new manager, now they can start to look to patch those things together. But it's been the real challenge, is finding that consistency throughout the season, to really push those teams further ahead. The likes of Vitória, the likes of Braga. That's the challenge for them now. But you can see it, and sometimes even when they play big teams, that they're raring to go. They want to perform. They're capable of performing. For sure, a lot of their players are capable of striving for even bigger steps in their career. So there's no reason why they can't believe that they should be in and amongst the likes of Braga and Vitória, and trying to crack into that top five.
Absolutely, I agree with that. And he's not the first Hugo Oliveira. He's not the first one of Marco Silva's assistants to come to the Premier League. Who was the other one? I feel like
Is
Casapia.
João, was it
I
João
think
Pedro Sousa?
yes, true. I think there's been at least one. So who knows? Maybe
And
he'll be there.
they also had Nuno Espírito Santo's assistant, did they not? Rui Pedro Barbosa or something like that.
Well, there you
He
go. They
who's
see.
now gone back to Nottingham Forest. So yeah.
So
It's an
yeah,
interesting one for a goalkeeping coach to make that
that's
jump. It's
exactly what
quite a
I
peculiar
thought.
one, isn't it?
Exactly what I thought.
I used to sign him a lot in Football Manager. That's the only way I actually know who he is.
So you know more about him than us then. I spent 10 minutes on his
Yeah, he's
Wikipedia
decent.
page
Anyone looking for a goalkeeper coach, that's a good
earlier
pickup.
today. All right, well, gents, I think we'll leave it there. We covered plenty of stuff on that podcast. So yeah, thank you very much for listening. And Patrick, thank you so much for joining us once again. We always appreciate your input on the
Yep.
podcast. I'm sure we'll have you on many times before the season ends. So and there'll be all info in the description about how you can follow Patrick on various social media and stuff like that.
Yep,
I was
thank you
going to
very much.
say, I was sorry, Patrick. I was just going to say, keep an eye out for us as well, because we might have some surprises over the Christmas break. Are you
Obviously,
gonna leave it at that? Let's leave it at
well,
that.
if you join our Patreon for £1 a month, you'll be the first to hear about it.
See, this is what
Let's
I mean. This is why Barney should be running the podcast. I always forget to do this stuff. But yes, he's absolutely right. Join the Patreon if you want to get loads of good bonus stuff. And it's only £1. And I should have said that at the beginning of the show. But there you go. Guys, let's leave it there. Thanks again for joining us. And yeah, we'll see you on a podcast very soon.